This is the third in our series of forums featuring the candidates seeking your vote in the Commonwealth this fall. Before we came on the air, we flipped a coin to see who would speak first. Mr. Watkins won the toss, so we will begin with you. Tell us a little bit about what got you into this race.
Thank you, Todd Hatton. I'm honored to be on this program and appreciate sharing the microphones with Jason Crockett. I'm thrilled to be in Murray, Kentucky at Murray State University on campus where I have 2 degrees. I'm a college professor, a professor of political science, have been for 22 years. I'm serving my third term, 6 years on the Paducah City Commission. Politics is my first love. I've always been intrigued and wanted to participate and try to contribute and make Western Kentucky, Paducah, McCracken County more specifically a better place to live. I'm real proud of my record on the Paducah City Commission. I've never voted to increase any taxes. I voted against the permanent increase in the city payroll tax. I voted to cut property taxes twice. I was a major leader in landing the 2+2 degree program with Murray State University, which will make it a whole lot easier to recruit industry, jobs, economic development to Paducah and McCracken County, because a 4-year university presence is just absolutely crucial. So finally, after about 50 years, I think this is probably the best thing or one of the best things to happen to Paducah and McCracken County in the last 50 years. I serve on the Community Scholarship Board of Directors, which allows all qualifying area high school graduates to attend the first 2 years of college free of charge. So I've voted 100% for economic incentives that have created and or retained nearly 2,000 jobs just in the nearly 6 years that I've been on the Paducah City Commission, and that equates to approximately $90 million in new private capital investment. And we've got some really good prospects we're getting ready to announce right now as we speak. And so there's just a lot you can do to improve the quality of life of people. And I would like to take that experience, energy, my education, and go to Frankfort and work at a higher level to try to improve the lives of all Kentuckians, and certainly specifically Western Kentucky and Paducah and McCracken County.
Mr. Crockett.
Well, I'm a business guy. That's what I've done my entire adult life. I've worked in the private sector. I work at a private radio station, and I see a lot of business people every day. And when I see these business people, they're struggling. They're having trouble getting the money they need for payroll, to meet payroll. They're having trouble paying all of the regulatory fees. They're having trouble paying all of their taxes. And the economy has taken a real big hit on these people. The reason why I got into this race is simply because I think we can do things better. We talk a lot about creating jobs. We talk a lot about creating opportunity. Well, we cannot create jobs if we don't first create an atmosphere conducive to the growth of businesses. One of the problems is our corporate tax rate in Kentucky is 6%. You know, I was at a meeting last night, and we were talking about economic development for Paducah, and there was kind of a debate as to whether or not it has economic development projects have been successful or not. I'm not want to get in that debate, but without some help from the levels in Frankfort, without some help from Frankfort, getting off of some of these high taxes and some of these terrible regulations that are stifling businesses, we're not going to see job growth. It's just it's not going to happen, and it can't happen. So my standpoint all along has been that we've got to put our arms around and reach out and hug small businesses so that we, for lack of a better term, so that we can actually help them to grow so that they will hire people. And we've got to stop taxing them so much and actually making it hard for them to grow new jobs and grow their businesses.
Well, Mr. Crockett, let me follow up with that. Do you see that as the central issue of this campaign?
Absolutely. The central issue of this campaign is getting people to work. And it's getting people to a place where they are more comfortable with their own personal economy. Mm. The economy that we are living in is difficult. Your cost of living is increasing, and the monies that you are receiving to conduct that lifestyle are decreasing in a lot of ways, especially if you consider the fact that your money is worth less now than it was just a few years ago. So it's absolutely the central issue. It's not just jobs, it's good jobs, and it's jobs that are sustainable and it's creating opportunity for the people of District 3 and the state of Kentucky.
Mr. Watkins, so what do you see as the central issue of the campaign?
Well, Jason's absolutely correct. It's jobs. So many people have had to leave Western Kentucky and Paducah and McCracken County in particular over the years, over the decades. My dad's family, every single one of his brothers and sisters except for, two of them, they were big families. They all left. All my moms, there was six of them, they all left. Most went to Detroit. Because there weren't jobs around here that paid a living wage. And so we have got to try to do everything we possibly can to make Paducah, McCracken County, and Western Kentucky an attractive place for people to do business. And certainly the tax code needs to be revised, and we'll address that as we go through the morning, I'm sure. But I think we need those things in place that make Paducah attractive. There are a lot of things already in place. One, communities, if you look at cities across the country that are growing, they're located on a major interstate. We have three major interstates. We're at the confluence of four rivers. Paducah, Kentucky is now the inland waterways capital of the country. We have 24 barge companies whose national headquarters are, in the case of Ingram, regional, but more employees work here than their national headquarters in Nashville. 24 barge companies basically headquartered in Paducah, Kentucky. We have air. We have three railroads coming through here. We have a moderate climate, and we're centrally located. We're within an eight-hour drive of 70% of the U.S. population. So we've got everything in place. We need a more business-friendly tax code. We need more aggressive leadership. And we needed a four-year university presence here. Communities that are growing have a four-year university presence. We have never had that. Now, finally, well, we do have a four-year engineering agreement with the University of Kentucky on our campus. And now with the 2+2 with Murray State University, Paducah, Kentucky is now a university town. We have, if you add up our enrollment at our two-year school, which is the number two rated two-year community college in America out of over 1,200 community colleges, we have 8,000 students. Murray State, 2,150 approximately at the UK Engineering College. If you add all that together, we have over 10,000 college university students just in Paducah and McCracken County. So we're a university town now. So now that we have the 2+2 four-year university presence, or when it opens in about a year, we're going to have everything in place. We got a great economic development coordinator in Chad Chancellor who's working very hard. The governor's office has sent us numerous leads, more so than any recent previous governors in 30 years. And we're working those. They've been very good to us. You have to work through the governor's office to land these big prospects that are interested in your state. And so the governor's been very good to us in sending us a lot of very attractive prospects, and we've landed some, and we're getting ready to land several more that will employ a lot of people, and that's what it takes. And you have to provide incentive money. You just have to do it. And so, I voted 100% for the incentive money necessary to land these companies and get the four-year university presence here with Murray State University also. That's critical.
Well, let's go right to the tax issue. Governor Steve Beshear's Blue Ribbon Tax Commission is set to deliver its recommendations to the governor next month. Mr. Watkins, is there something that you, in particular, that you would like to see in that report?
Yes. One, I'm anxious to see the recommendations from the task force that's due to report November the 15th. And I have a lot of confidence in that task force because, well, John Williams Sr. is on it, Bob Leeper and the Lieutenant Governor, along with a lot of very talented, bright people from all across the state. So I'm interested in seeing what they are recommending. But we do need a more business-friendly tax code. Jason's exactly right. The corporate tax rate is way too high. Me personally, I would like to abolish the state income tax and replace that with sales tax, generating revenue from a sales tax. There are eight states in the country that do not have a state income tax. Texas does not. They're the fastest growing state in the country and have been for a number of years. They get 22.8% of their revenue at the state level from sales taxes. And so I would like to look at the Texas model. I'm not suggesting we tax services, but to abolish the state income tax and look at the state sales tax to generate the revenue necessary to remain revenue neutral is what we need to do. You don't want to raise taxes. You want to remain revenue neutral, but a tax code that will grow with the economy. And if you replicate Texas percentage according to their GDP, the same level of taxation, sales taxation in Kentucky would generate $5.5 billion out of about $9.5 billion needed each year to balance the budget. So I think that would probably fill that gap, but we'll look at more specific numbers. But that is was something that I think I would like to very seriously look at doing in Kentucky.
Mr. Crockett, is there anything that you want to see in those recommendations?
Well, absolutely. And I think that that the idea of abolishing an income tax is kind of it's an interesting idea, but we use words like revenue neutral. Why would we change our tax system if we didn't need more money? That's unfortunately, and I believe that Mr. Watkins is very genuine in wanting to help, but revenue neutral is not really an option. Really, the bottom line is people want to change our tax code so that there's more money for bureaucrats in Frankfurt to spend. That's first off. The services that would be taxed in order to actually make that difference, because you got to keep in mind a sales tax increase is an attack on poor people, because right now extremely poor people who don't pay in our income taxes. Okay, so we're going to take their money and let their spending power even less, because they're going to have to be paying higher taxes on things like milk and bread and whatever else. I'm not necessarily for that. The only way to make a sales tax situation work and be a benefit is to tax services. And I am totally against taxing services. Like realtors, makes the cost of the American dream more expensive. That's a service that would be taxed under some people's proposals. Doctors, you would have to tax those doctors. But I don't think that making medical care more expensive is a good thing. And lawyers, while I don't necessarily, I think that lawyers make plenty of money. I think that when we make justice more expensive for people who are defending themselves in criminal situations and whatnot, I believe that's a bad idea and a bad approach too. Now, in fairness, and Mr. Watkins did mention that he didn't want to tax the services, but the bottom line is we would have to, in order to make a sales tax to be beneficial. There is, again, I reiterate, there's no reason to change our tax code unless it's to make more money for the state coffers. Another thing that I would like to mention on this topic is that, yes, we have a 6% tax rate for corporate taxes in Kentucky. Historically, if we cut that tax rate, we're actually going to get more revenue off of it because we'll be able to attract more people. By all means, my opponent, Gerald, he knows that in state government, trying to attract these businesses has been tough, probably because of our corporate tax rates. Another reason why it's been tough is because the city of Paducah has this crazy tax on insurance premiums and income taxes that are pretty high, which my opponent voted against the income tax, but at least the raising of the income tax. But the bottom line is it's probably been very tough, as he can admit, because they have worked hard to try to get economic development in Paducah. I'm not trying to take that away from anybody. But it starts in the levels in Frankfurt. We've got to get things under control in Frankfurt to make it easier for the economic development people in Paducah.
The collapse and repair of the Eggner's Ferry Bridge this past January and into May has highlighted the condition of our region's infrastructure. How would you address that issue? And I'll begin by asking you, Mr. Crockett, how would you fund those kinds of improvements if we are not seeking to bring in more money to the state coffers?
Well, our Department of Transportation is actually funded through the fuel taxes, and a lot of it is funded in fuel taxes. That's not the only source of funding that they have, but those fuel taxes are a lot of cases problematic, because you got people out there that don't want to pay so much for gasoline, so they're getting more fuel efficient cars, which means we've got to add more tax to a gallon of gas, which it's there has been some people out there that say, and if I've got a four-wheel drive SUV getting 20 miles the gallon, and my neighbor has a Prius or whatever that gets 40 miles the gallon, why should they have to pay less tax to drive on the same road? I don't want to get into that that debate, but the gas tax is funding the roads right now, and I don't see any change in that. I would like to mention on the gas tax, it just went up. I think it was July. It just went up again. With no vote from the legislature on that, because they voted a long time ago to make permanent incremental tax increases on the fuel tax. That's something we need to look at too, because I believe that constituents of these these legislators are getting a raw deal, even though they can't hold their legislator accountable because they're not voting on it.
Mr. Watkins.
Let me get to that. I want to first address, one, I would not favor the taxing food, as we do not in Kentucky right now. Certain foods that are tax exempt, we should maintain that, and I'm not suggesting we start taxing services, but we could shift more of the tax revenue that collected away from state income to a sales tax. There are a couple of things that these are near and dear to my heart, and these are the things I really want to do if I do get elected that would decrease state spending substantially. One, Kentucky needs to pass a welfare reform bill. We have never done that. Medicaid is the fastest growing part of the Kentucky budget. We're never going to balance the federal budget, and I favor a balanced budget amendment. We're never going to balance the federal budget nor stabilize Kentucky's budget unless we address entitlement spending. We have got to look at that, and what people need is hope and an opportunity. But we can't continue lifelong benefits for working-age, able-bodied people. I start with the premise that the elderly, the disabled, the infirm, we have an obligation morally and financially to take care of these people. But people of working age and able-bodied have a moral and financial responsibility to take care of themselves. But you can't just lop them off. So you give them 5 years. Here's an opportunity, government expense, to get you an education, get a degree, learn a skill, become an electrician or whatever. We're going to help you. Here's daycare vouchers, transportation vouchers, extend the Medicaid card. Do everything you can to help people become marketable, productive, so they can join the economic mainstream and support themselves. And the people who like this the most are people who have been dependent on welfare. But you have to have an end cap, an end time that where 100% of the people have to become productive at that point. Otherwise, we have got to be able to balance the budget. And the people who benefit the most are the people who are on welfare. So Kentucky, 10% of Kentuckians were on Medicaid in 2000. By 2010, 10 years later, that had doubled to 20% of Kentucky's population. Medicaid budget has increased 117% in the last 12 years, whereas the regular the budget itself has increased overall 41.4%. We've got to address entitlement spending. And the second fastest growing part of the Kentucky budget is corrections, $500 million budget, and it's grown 60% in the last 12 years. And so what I would like to do in that area quickly is repeal House Bill 463, which makes it difficult for law enforcement to do their jobs. And nationally, if you look at national figures, 53% of the people who are in our prisons are in there on drug charges. I think for personal possession of illicit drugs, one does not belong in prison. I think mandatory treatment on their dime, if they meet an income level to actually do that, and the faith-based community should be able to participate in that treatment. And then community service. That should be the options. They don't belong in prison. Use that space for violent criminals. I support a three strikes and you're out, third felony, life in prison, no probation, no parole. I think we need to find a constitutional way to put a cap on appeals. The death penalty, there's 35 men on death row in Kentucky. 15 have been there over 20 years. The longest served, 28 years, and died of natural causes. Costs over $31,000 a year to keep someone on death row. Corrections budget is growing, like I say, the second fastest in the entire state. We need to take costs over $24,000 a year to keep someone in prison in Kentucky, the general population, and we need to address the criminal code, save the prison space for the violent offenders and people who don't belong there. There's other treatments, mandatory treatment for substance abuse and community service, and those two put together will save Kentucky's taxpayers an awful lot of money, and we could balance, I think, we could balance the budget and not have to have any tax increases at all if we were to do those two things. On the infrastructure, Kentucky has spent a lot of money. They're rebuilding or building a new bridge to Leadbetter, which has long been needed. The Edgar's Ferry Bridge was built in a record time. The new bridge is in Louisville. Kentucky is spending a lot of money on infrastructure. But nationally, in this country, we only spend 2% of GDP on infrastructure. China spends 70%. So clearly at the national level, across the country, we need to address our aging infrastructure. That is for sure.
Well, let me dovetail off of that question of government involvement. What do you think the proper relationship is between the government and the governed, Mr. Watkins?
Well, I support a limited government. I think the private markets, generally speaking, are more efficient at delivering goods and services than the federal government or the state government is. I prefer government closer to the people, local level, where people have greater input. I think taxes need to be low. They're too high. We take too large a percentage. If you're in the middle income tax bracket, if you add up all your taxes, top to bottom, local to top, and excise taxes, sales taxes, about 50% of your income goes to the government. I think that's too much. And so we need to look at ways of becoming more efficient, reduce levels of employment through attrition, and become more efficient at our operations. The government has to create, as Jason said, an environment where the private markets can be productive and create jobs, which is what we need. I think that is a high priority of government. And then the highest priority of government at all levels is to protect its citizens. So a strong defense, of course, that's national level. But crime and punishment, you know, at state and local level, at all levels, the number one priority should be to protect the citizens. And then right after that, economic development, creating jobs where people can support a family, make a living. And then quality of services, certainly are things that the government can do to provide opportunities that we refer to as quality of life that make it a place attractive to live for people and their families.
Mr. Crockett, the same question.
Well, I think a lot of times government needs to get out of the way. I'll give an example. If you live in certain places in Kentucky and you're building a structure, and the specs call for a 2x6 to be put in, if you want to put in a 2x8 just to make it stronger, there are people out there that would just raise Cain, and regulators and government people just shake their head and scratch their heads on this stuff. They need to. We need to make sure that our regulations make sense, and sometimes use some common sense. So the government, in a lot of ways, needs to stay out of the way. I want to comment on a couple of things here. One is that I completely agree with what Gerald is saying about criminals and in prison and whatnot. But I also want to point out that you see more crime and more drug use when the economy is bad. It's just a natural correlation. In fact, they used to say that bars were the economic-proof business, recession-proof business, because people would still go spend their money to try to drown their sorrows or whatever. Unfortunately, our community, and not necessarily just our community, but the time and age we live in, people do that with different things now, drugs being those different things. And so I think that if we improve the economy, we are going to improve our overall criminal and crime looks around Western Kentucky and across the country. It's not just Western Kentucky. Back to the government issue and the infrastructure thing you were talking about, we've got to have infrastructure. We've got to make sure, and providing great infrastructure, again, goes back to providing those businesses with the tools that they need to survive. We've got to be able to get our goods and services to market, and we've got to be able to get our workers to the jobs. So I absolutely agree with increased infrastructure. In fact, I'm in favor. There's been talk for years about bringing in another interstate. I think I-66, is that right, Gerald? The problem is, where do you build it to? How do you connect us to Missouri? There was an idea about building a big superstructure bridge from Wickliffe over to Wyatt, Missouri. That was going to be too expensive. But nevertheless, long and the short of it is, I'm in favor of bringing that interstate here and finding a way to build to get the bridges we need for it. So I'm definitely in favor of the infrastructure to help the people and help the businesses. So.
Well, my last question is, if we need these infrastructure improvements, mm-hmm. and they are being funded primarily through the fuel tax, which may prove inadequate to the task, then how does state government address that? Where does it find the money to build the bridge, the highway, the rail line?
Well, part of it is going to have to be from fuel tax and things like that. I want to mention again that when we go to building these big infrastructure projects, again, this word revenue neutral, it's a nice political term, but realistically, if we're going to address our tax code, which is they keep saying is broken, which, and I agree with, it needs to be changed, they're really talking about increasing taxes somewhere for someone, and that's really what it boils down to. I do want to also mention something else and about the last question you asked about government. I think government spends way too much money. In Kentucky, the state of Kentucky is $63 billion in debt. $63 billion. Now, some of that's funded, some of it's unfunded, some of it's pensions, but that's a lot of money. The city of Paducah, $31.1 million in debt. And I don't think that all of that money has been spent wisely. With all due respect to Gerald Watkins, he's a very good person, and in fact, I would consider him a friend during this campaign. But he has voted to spend beaucoups of money, and he's talking on this radio program about fiscal responsibility. And that's just something that I disagree with, and I think we've got to get our spending under control. And if I'm sent to Frankfurt, I will vote 100% in making sure that our spending counts. It is worth the cost. The ends have to justify the means.
Mr. Watkins, can you speak a little bit more about the term revenue neutral?
I want to address that.
And I apologize for the seemingly attack there. I do consider Gerald to be a great person, but
I understand that, and that's legitimate. Well, speaking of revenue neutral, I think we need a tax code that grows with the economy. That's what you got to have. And so I'm anxious to look at those recommendations and see what all options are on the table. Mm. Okay, getting to Paducah's budget. I called the city finance director. You may be right. He said the debt was totaled up to $29 million, but there's a close number there anyway.
That was as of, I think, the meeting, one of the city council meetings. I got that from a minute. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, that's probably right. At any rate, Paducah has 7.29% of debt in relation to the general and investment fund. Moody's national average for cities the size of Paducah is 7.91%. So we're kind of well below that. We also, by city ordinance, are required to keep 8% of that general investment fund on reserve. So actually, we could become debt-free tomorrow if we wanted to. And so we really, according to the national average, we don't have that much debt. Now, I know he's referring to some spending one on the executive end, but I just wanted to lay out what our options were. One, and for comparison, Owensboro had an executive end built there they were going to have to get rid of. They bought it for $8 million and tore it down for $750,000. Ours in Paducah is very comparable, built by the Green family. Mr. Singh purchased it just a few short years ago for $5.7 million, and he was very difficult to negotiate with, but we needed there was so much evidence that hotel was antiquated, wasn't built to the code, and it needed to come down. And so we negotiated, and we purchased it for $1.8 million, which was a bargain. He had a note of $3.9 million, and he's still owed. And we had it torn down for $221,000, which was, you know, we were thinking we'd have to spend $1.5 million, but we got it torn down for $221,000. They did a great job. And then we had to pay $421,000 for utilities, unpaid taxes, for contractors that had done work on the executive end that he didn't pay. We didn't feel like the right thing to do was to make those people take the hit, so we paid that. So now we have 17.5 acres of very developable land for development on the riverside, But a new hotel is going to be built on the inside the flood wall on what used to be the Riverside Hospital. That land was donated to the city free of charge, and we have we're going to be announcing in less than a month a national chain, top-notch, that's going to build about 150-room hotel right there on that spot to anchor the Julian Carroll Convention Center and the Expo Center. We have, the city of Paducah has about $25 million worth of property in those two buildings. We can't just let them set and deteriorate, and they don't generate any revenue, and that money has to come out of the general tax fund. Without a hotel anchoring it, they're never going to be profitable. So it's desperate that we have a hotel down there to anchor those two conventions. So we have about 100,000 square foot of convention floor space there that we need to utilize for conventions. If we didn't do something, and we paid about $800,000 for that pavilion that people criticize us for, but the company that sold it to us, we have it in a contract that if we keep it for at least 3 years, he will buy it back from us for 80% of its value. So that's exactly what we're going to do when the new hotel opens. And we get to keep the Quilters Convention, which brings in 35,000 people every April, $21 million in investment spending, economic spending in our economy in Paducah, McCracken County, and Western Kentucky, $21 million a year, that we were going to lose that convention. Des Moines, Iowa, Nashville, Tennessee were offering them better incentives than we could to go there. And if the Schraders weren't loyal Paducans, they would have done that. So we get to keep them. And with a new hotel with this floor space that we renovated on the Julian Carroll side, they're also going to have a convention in the fall that will probably bring in around 20,000 people. And we'll be able to start bringing in some major regional conventions that will generate a lot of revenue, tax money, and spending for the local businesses, creates jobs. I mean, what do you do? You have to do that. You can't just not do it. And then the soccer complex, we were criticized for that, but there are between 700 and 1,000 kids that play soccer every year in Paducah and McCracken County. They were playing on literally a dump. I used to work for the city street department from age 20 to 23 and used to dump in there. I know what's in there. It's a dump, a toxic dump, and you can't irrigate it. You can't light it. When my daughter played on it several years ago, I walked those fields. You twist your ankle on them, a little pot hose and something. You can't – people – send us letters and criticize us when we try to have a little tournament here at the poor condition of our soccer fields. So we looked at all the acreage in Paducah and McCracken County within 2 miles of the interstate that was large enough to have a soccer complex. We come up with six pieces of property. We all walked all six of them. The 165 acres in Reedland bordering I-24, we unanimously agreed was the best spot. We negotiated the price down for $900,000, granted, it's maybe a 10-minute drive to the hotels and restaurants, and so we have found that we didn't think would be available acreage inside the Information Age Park, beautiful spot right off the road, just past the mall area, and we are going to develop that for the new soccer complex. And we are going to sell the price. It's on the market now as we speak, the property in Reedland. We have a $220,000 appraisal just on the home and 2 acres. Take 5 acres off. You got 160 acres. Divide that by $680,000. That's $4,250 an acre. That's a very good price for beautiful land and make a great subdivision. We got interest in it already, and we hadn't enlisted it. In fact, we've had one offer on it, so I'm confident we'll get the money back out of that.
Mr. Watkins, we're running up on time here.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Sorry.
Mr. Crockett, closing statement.
My closing statement would be that same people have been in charge in Frankfort since the 1920s, basically. Not the identical same people, but the same party and the same philosophies, Gerald happens to be a part of. Those people have sent him a lot of money for his campaign, and they really want him to win. And the reason why is because they know that when Gerald Watkins gets to, and I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but they assume that when Gerald Watkins gets to Frankfort, he's going to vote for a guy named Greg Stumbo for Speaker of the House. And if that happens, nothing is going to change. Gerald has some great ideas, and Gerald's a nice guy, but Gerald's not going to get anything done that Greg Stumbo doesn't want him to do if Greg Stumbo is the Speaker of the House. An example would be pro-life legislation that was bargained and everything was set up, ready to go. They were going to put it to a vote, and it would have passed, but Greg Stumbo stopped it in its tracks. Didn't happen. Another example would be all of our pension problems that we have in the state of Kentucky right now. These are problems that were caused by the same people that are in charge now, and they want to keep being in charge and get another chance to run with that ball. Unfortunately, they've dropped the ball, and they're asking for more and more chances. Every single problem the state of Kentucky has can be directly attributed to these exact people who are asking, basically, for us to put them back in charge in Frankfort. And if you think things are hunky-dory and they're great in Frankfort, and you think that the policies that have been instilled there are working, then the truth is you need to vote for Gerald Watkins. But if you think that we've got problems, if you think our tax code needs to be changed, if you think that anything we've talked about here needs to be done, anything, even down to changing the tax code to any kind of pro-life legislation, which I'm 100% pro-life, endorsed by the Kentucky Right to Life. I'm also endorsed by the National Federation of Independent Businesses. If you think that anything needs to change in the state of Kentucky, then you have to vote for Republicans. I hate to make it partisan, but it's just a fact. And I happen to be a Republican. I know that when I get to Frankfort, I will not vote for Greg Stumbo for Speaker of the House. And so that's the difference between me and Gerald. I think Gerald's a pretty nice guy, and I think he would probably say, I hope he would say that I'm a nice guy too. But the fact of the matter is, if you send the same people to Frankfort, you're going to get the same thing. And I'm hoping that you will vote for change. I'm asking for your vote on November 6th, and I would be honored to serve.
Mr. Watkins.
Thank you, Todd, and thank you, Jason. I do appreciate that. And Jason's a gentleman. He's a very intelligent young man. I've enjoyed this campaign and getting to know him, and I do consider him a friend, and I think we'll be friends after this is over with. And whoever wins, I'm sure the other one will be supportive and with whoever goes to Frankfort. I would first say that I established myself as an independent voice on the Paducah City Commission, not a puppet of anyone or aligning myself with any particular group. I'm a very conservative, I think pragmatic individual who looks at each issue on its merits, and I don't let people or groups influence my conscience and what I think is the best for the citizens. I think I proved that over these nearly 6 years on the Paducah City Commission. If anybody paid attention to the news around here at that time, they would know that. I'm like Jason, I'm pro-life. I'm a member of the Kentucky Right to Life Association. I have been for several years. I've donated money to their cause for several years. I attended their pro-life rally in Frankfort in the Capitol. And I'm very staunchly pro-life. As far as in Frankfort, a lot of people feel like if the House goes Republican, David Williams will be running the show, and most people feel like he's the biggest detriment to progress in the entire state of Kentucky. And so I'm not so sure that would be the solution, but with 58 or 59 House seats, I don't think the Democrats are going to lose control of the House. If you want to get anything done anywhere but in Paducah and McCracken County, which is starved for a good, strong leadership, you need to go with the team that's in power. The minority party, whichever party it happens to be, in this case, it's the Republicans in the House. You're playing defense all the time. You can never score because you never get the ball. I have a great working relationship with the governor. He's been very good to Paducah and McCracken County as far as sending us job opportunities and many that we're getting ready to announce. Couldn't be any better. I'm not beholden to any one particular person in the House of Representatives. I'm going to vote my conscience and do the things that I would like to do. I don't aspire to leadership, and the people who elect me, I answer to the people in Paducah and McCracken County. And so I have the same conservative traditional values that they do, and that was pointed out when it was announced today that the Commonwealth Policy Center, Richard Nelson, announced that their group was endorsing my candidacy. They endorsed all the Republicans in Western Kentucky running for the House and the State Senate, and I was the only Democrat that was endorsed by Richard Nelson's group, the Commonwealth Policy Center. So I'm real proud of that pro-life, conservative, family-valued, centered organization. He used to work with the American Family Association, of which I'm a member of. And so I think I'll be in a position with my education, energy, experience, in contacts, to be a very effective leader for the people of Paducah and McCracken County, to make this a better place to live, provide greater opportunities, and vote your values. So I would love to have your support and vote on November 6th for Gerald Watkins for 3rd District State Representative. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be with you today.
Democrat Gerald Watkins and Republican Jason Crockett are running for Kentucky's 3rd District State House seat. Gentlemen, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having us, and I appreciate you opening up your airwaves so that we could get our messages out.